Christopher Hitchens is here, born in England, educated at Oxford. He has become a Washington insider, known for his prolific writing and for his wit. He's a longtime contributor to The Nation and Vanity Fair. His new book is called No One Left to Lie To, The Triangulations of William Jefferson Clinton. Explain to me your feelings about him and how you came to these conclusions, because you are as passionate about your animus towards him as anyone I know.
Yes, I really, really, really don't like him. My little book is, in part, is an address, I hope it's got a general interest, but in part it's a reproach to the American left, to the American liberals, for falling for him and for defending him when, apart from anything else, he is an extremely and always has been a very extremely conservative person politically, but also because of his corrupt and selfish, and I would say mean, almost psychopathically deceitful tendencies. That have done enormous damage to politics, as any honest person could appreciate them. I think it's been a tremendous sign of the degeneration of American liberalism.
You come to
and that's been an argument really well worth having because it's fratricide.
I'm prepared to argue that debate. I mean, may have that debate with you in a sense, not debate,
please.
But please to engage mm-hmm. you on it. But you say so many things that it's quickly to jump on them. One,
you come at this
from your own ideological position, which is where.
Well, to the left of Mr. Clinton. Well, okay. To the left of most people.
Well,
to the left of The Nation, actually, which is where I started.
The Nation magazine. Yeah. Well, to the left of traditional liberalism in America.
Yes, I mean, whenever I go on C-SPAN, our old mutual friend Brian Lamb yep. always asks me, "Said, are you still a socialist?" I know one day he's hoping I'm going to say, "No, okay, Brian, I've got over all that now. I left all that behind." Partly just to spite him.
Yeah.
I'm not going to deny it. It's where I learned my politics, and what I learned from it isn't by all means all useless.
So, I mean, characterize yourself in terms of any politics in England, in the United States?
No, Democratic Socialist.
Democratic Socialist.
Because it's an international position. One of the reasons I'm attracted to it is that it's the same in all, or should be the same for all societies.
A Democratic Socialist like Tony Benn in England?
I'm quite an admirer of Tony Benn.
I have
differences with him, but he's an honorable guy, and I know him slightly, yes.
Yeah.
I'm not a great admirer of Mr. Blair, who I think is, you know, one of those people who wants politics to be all things to all men. But I don't think is a mean person or a corrupt person.
So the difference in Blair and Clinton,
in many ways,
for your money is...
The differences with Clinton, you see, are not political. They are to do with a ruthless, megalomaniac political style and with a real self-advertised readiness for corruption and dirty work, which is what got me into trouble with him and his cohort.
All right, well, let's talk
about... Are we getting ahead of the story?
Well, yes, but that's okay.
I can begin at the beginning, if you like. New Hampshire, I always suspected that he, Clinton. I always thought this new liberal Democrat,
New Democratic Leadership Council, DLC,
was a bit glib and a bit sordid, because if you, after 8 years of Reagan and four of Bush, to conclude that the main problem in American politics was that the Democratic Party was too much to the left, seemed to me a weird conclusion. And it was all based on saying, well, what we've really got to do is address the morals of the underclass. That's the real problem with this country, is the underclass doesn't behave well. I thought that actually there were some overclass problems that needed attention, but... So I admit I went to New Hampshire not liking him. I didn't much care about the flowers business. I still don't. I think he treated her very badly.
Jennifer Flowers.
Yeah, I think he treated her very badly, and I think he lied to everyone about it. But that seems so unsurprising.
But any other politician would have handled that the same way, would he not?
Here's what he did.
But any other politician would have tried to.
No. If Mr. Clinton said, yes, I did, I loved her, and it's none of your damn business, we'd be living in a much better culture now. I would have applauded him if he'd said that. It would also have been true.
That he loved her?
Yeah, well, he certainly acted like he did. He's since
loved
then,
her?
Yes. They were obviously very tight, and she really loved him.
Yeah, did he love Monica?
Well, suppose that he had said he loved her, and yes, I did. That would have just been a little nicer than saying, well, no, I had nothing to do with her, and then... 7 years later saying, okay, I did it with her once and that was it. As if he doesn't know that it's the height of bad manners to sleep with someone
once. But Washington is full of politicians who are not stepping forward to say, I had an affair with someone that I may have told him I love.
But don't, anyway, here's what he did to get out of it.
Right.
He was many points behind by this stage. He left the campaign trail in New Hampshire. He flew down to Arkansas, where he was still governor, to personally supervise the execution of a lobotomized black defendant, inmate, Ricky Rear Rector by name, in Cummins Prison, who couldn't even understand the charges against him. He'd blown his brain away. He was gone. He didn't know he'd been sentenced to death. He didn't understand when they came to give him his last meal what was happening. And Clinton just made it absolutely clear. He was changing the subject.
He rejected the
law and order. You're not going to get me on law and order. You're not going to think I'm soft. You're not going to willy-horton me.
Right.
And the two things about it that sickened me are, one, that he did this in cold blood to this guy, and I have a long section about it in my book, and two, that no one in my profession and no one in the liberal wing of politics thought this was a test of character or of intention. Because among the things that depressed me, I did write a column about it, Murray Kempton did. Mm-hmm. That was about it.
Right.
What depressed me really was the suggestion it had of a relationship in the president's mind or the then governor's mind, of a sick relationship between sex and death, that he would change the subject away from the illicit flowers love nest to the lethal chamber.
Okay, but then you are putting, what you were doing in that case, I mean, you can make the argument that he should have been more compassionate, more sensitive in that issue, and you could make the argument that he did it because he wanted to firmly come down and make his position about capital punishment evident to all, and that he was tough on criminals and not compassionate about
issues. Can you imagine?
Let me finish my point.
I'm sorry.
My point is that you are simply, you know, you are reading motivation where you don't know as to the fact that he left Jennifer Flowers because he wanted to tie together sex and death. That the motivation to go there rather than distract from Jennifer Flowers was, in fact,
it was a very strange week to leave New Hampshire. He was in trouble. It was quite a desperate gamble to go down there. And this is a guy who, any other week, would have received clemency from the governor, because there was no one in the prison thought he should be executed. This is a tough prison, in a tough state. The prison chaplain resigned on the issue. The warders and others have been quoted as saying, we shouldn't have done this to this guy.
It was like killing a child.
Okay.
Yeah, but did they say it shouldn't be done?
Well, yes, of course they said it shouldn't be done.
I don't know.
Yeah, and the prison chaplain resigned. This is not a sentimental area of the United States, as you know. So, no, I'm sticking to my point. I think it was an atrocious thing to do. It suggested something faintly monstrous about the guy, and it suggested that there was probably nothing he wouldn't do. And it also suggested an attitude to a signal, you might say, about what kind of...
But he addressed that criticism at the time, did he not?
No, he didn't. There was never a response.
There was some criticism. I remember people raising
a couple
the question.
He has never been asked a question about it. I know, because I tried in New Hampshire, and he turned his back and walked away.
But shift the scene. I mean, there was criticism. I beg to differ with trepidation because you've written the book. But there was no criticism of him at the time anywhere. I know there was.
Let me phrase it to you like this. If a Republican governor, an ambitious Republican governor trying to be president, had, in the course of a tough primary, returned to his home state to supervise the execution of a retarded, mentally disabled black man, the name of that man would be very well known. I think you'll agree.
Agree.
We would know.
I'm not arguing whether he should.
We would know,
all
right. Ricky Ray Rector's name is practically not known at all. That's in a sense my point.
Your point also is that this for you is
because
a
it shows
defining
the betrayal of the liberals. Yeah.
A defining what? This act was for him a defining insight into his character, and what else?
Well, I thought so, and I thought it showed a creepily sadistic attitude. And a willingness to bid for the racist subconscious as well in the electorate, to say, look, you know, don't call me soft. I can snuff this black guy who doesn't know what the charge against him is. Willingness to bid for that. A willingness to get really rough when he was already engaged on lying on another front about Miss Flowers in changing the subject. And what I consider to be an eerie and unattractive ability to get liberals to keep their mouths tight shut, which they shut them then, and they've kept them shut ever since, about that kind of calculation and what it entails.
Because liberals, I assume the indictment here against liberals and then the Democratic Party is that they made a cop-out because they wanted a Democrat in the White House for all the spoils that come.
Roughly speaking, yeah.
That's it. That was the deal they made in their own.
Yeah.
And Republicans are prepared probably to do the same thing in the year 2000 in terms of accepting someone less conservative than they'd like to seek because they want to be back in the White House. Correct?
That's one element of triangulation, and it's also sometimes called, traditionally that was called the lesser evil theory, where you simply say in advance, well, this guy, I'll vote for whoever the nominee is, but it's a pretty arid form of politics, and there were better people running against Clinton for that nomination. I think many people could have taken Bush that year, as a matter of fact. I don't think it took Clinton to do so. But it is the way, however, you have identified the way in which people console themselves. You've identified the way in which people explain these things to themselves, yes. Justify them to themselves.
It's a political compromise.
Yeah.
I give a principle that I may believe in because of. And but you had other.
They grant themselves the principles, of course, but only in order to give themselves the right to sell them out.
Yeah.
They may not have had the principles to start off with, actually. Not always true that they did.
I go back to your point. You're saying that this book is, in fact, how liberals, in a sense, lost their soul because of Bill Clinton and wanting to see him in the White House. And B, that Bill Clinton is, you know, for you, almost the embodiment of all evil.
Well, I think he's an abnormally ghastly individual in every respect, yes.
In every respect?
Every respect, yeah.
Because he lies about?
Because he lies about everything to everybody. No one left to lie to. Everything to everyone.
Which is the title of the book.
Yeah, he uses his daughter as a prop. He uses the help as comfort women and then uses public money to defame them and blackmail them.
Using daughter as a prop. I mean,
using
name
daughter
me
as a
politician. I can name you lots of politicians who have had their family out front, you know, as part of their wholesomeness.
Yes, fair enough. I mean, that's not unknown.
And that's using family as a prop.
Suddenly to take Miss Chelsea across. Look, let me put it to you like this. I mean, suppose that one had got oneself into some indiscretion of that sort.
Right.
It's impossible to imagine it happening. And, you know, people were looking at you slightly askance and so on. I can imagine doing various things.
Yeah.
In the hope of, you know, salvaging myself. But among them would not be appearing in front of the cameras holding my daughter's hand. I know I wouldn't do that.
Okay. But I mean,
for the first time,
I
in a
hear
long
you
time.
And I. You and I could both disagree. I could both make the same judgment.
Call me old-fashioned. There are some things won't do.
And I'm not disagreeing with your point of view about that. I'm just saying that you weigh it with much heavier contempt than most people. You can say, look, that's.
Well, remember what I'm pushing back against. I'm pushing back against a huge consensus of people who said, for a long, long time, all this is his private stuff, it's none of our affair. I mean, they didn't say that about other corrupt presidents. So this corrupt president and this crooked president has come with a huge bodyguard of falsity and propaganda supplied by intellectuals and academics and journalists for him, which Mr. Nixon couldn't count on getting, didn't get, nor Mr. Reagan. So it seemed to me, it was more incumbent upon me to say what I thought, and to point out how people were fooling themselves and fooling others.
As one who is a huge admirer of yours.
Thank you.
I say that because of your polemic skills, because of you're a very interesting guy, and you've been on this show more than once.
Indeed, too kind.
Having said that...
I knew the other shoe was there.
No, it's not. Have you ever asked yourself, maybe I'm just overboard about this guy? I've just let myself go nuts about this, and I need to come to some saner place.
Yeah, I've asked myself, and it's been said to me by other people.
I know, sure.
Believe me. And in a way, I guess I could say the book is an attempt to get him out of my system. Yes.
Really? But a kind of catharsis.
I thought, I started writing that this is a dangerous guy in January 1992. I'm going to see it through now. I'm going to see it through to the end. And you know what? I'm going to be vindicated, too. People are going to be saying to me a little while from now, as they already are beginning to, maybe you were right about the guy all along. So that might be the reward for looking a bit obsessed for a while. Well, then what I would hope was people wouldn't give themselves away, wouldn't sell their votes and their principles so cheaply to people in the future, and not to a politician like this one, ever again.
Well, I mean, you are nothing if not an iconoclast, so let me start from there. And have had interesting opinions about a lot of people, including, famously, Mother Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, you look at his foreign policy.
Yes.
And characterize how you see his policy today with respect to Serbia.
Well, Mr. Clinton was asked by the Italian Prime Minister about a week before the bombing began. Mr. Clinton, we had Mr. Dalimer in Washington.
What are you going to do if the bombing doesn't work?
And what if Mr. Milosevic doesn't change his mind? And what if instead he tries to throw all the Albanians out of Kosovo? Italian Prime Minister came out, gave his own press briefing, and said, Mr. Clinton's answer to this question was to look at him like this, like he'd never thought of that before, and to turn to Sandy Berger. Sandy Berger, by the way, can you imagine having such a guy in the White House, and say, well, Sandy, what would we do if that happened? And Berger looked like that and said, well, I guess we'd just keep bombing. Italian Prime Minister couldn't believe it. It's Italy's nearest neighbor. The bases are on his soil. His government could fall. They could be overwhelmed by refugees.
But he signed on.
Yeah, of course, because it's a NATO birthday. But he was hoping for a better answer than that from the president. Then the refugees are flung out. It's the biggest humanitarian calamity in Europe for a long time. And Clinton says, oh, don't blame us for that. We knew that was going to happen. We allowed for all that.
Here's my question.
This is monstrous. It's the shame of it is not felt anything like enough, in my view. They knew this was going to happen. They did nothing to
The shame of it in the fact that
the president openly claims that this was part of the plan.
That they understood that Milosevic would do what he would has done. I think you'll find some debate about that, whether they knew that he was going to do it. I realize they've been all over the place on this.
They've been consistent on that. The Pentagon spokesman has said that, Cohen has said it, Albright said it, and the president has said it. We anticipated this. That was the line of the day, so it wouldn't look as if they were stupid and something had happened that made them look bad.
And you are saying if they knew about it...
Where are the blankets at the frontier?
If they knew about it and then went ahead with the bombing, then they are what?
They're complicit in the expulsion of the refugees. They're complicit in the ethnic cleansing of Kosovo. So if there was to be a punishment for it, they'd have to go and stand in the same dock.
So is it your argument against the president on this particular case that he did not go in, A, that he did not level with us about what he knew and expected, B, he did not put on the table the possibility of ground troops, and three, he did not use the full force of bombing that he could have used?
Well, those could be recombined in another way, but I mean, and I'm not a military strategist, but I have been in the Balkans quite a bit. My view is that Mr. Clinton paid no attention to the subject, cares nothing about it, has not cared to inform himself, has been spending most of the relevant time using public money in his own defense and for his own private and selfish interests. We have had several very devastating reports of meetings he should have attended about either Iraq or Serbia, which he didn't show up at because he was closeted with his lawyers, wasting our time on his own selfishness. So I'm not impressed at all. But what he has actually said in public is appalling. And remember, though, I agreed that finally he had done the right thing in Bosnia. After trying not to for a very long time. The price which he willingly paid was to make Mr. Milosevic, not his enemy, but his co-signer and negotiating partner and honored guest at Dayton. That's quite a high price to pay. Now they've suddenly discovered Mr. Milosevic won't do after all, but this is hardly even amateur hour as far as statesmanship is concerned, and they've now made themselves responsible for the calamity in Kosovo, co-responsible for it. So I think it's a pretty bad picture, but on the other hand, you can relax because he is going to build the Star Wars system, which Reagan only promised to test. Clinton's now committed to building.
But it's a different Star Wars system.
It's still the biggest and the most destabilizing boondoggle ever undertaken. And it consummates his sellout to the military-industrial interests across the board.
Is it possible that you were so wrapped up in your, what's the best word? You're the much more...
Bottomless contempt for...
Yes, bottomless contempt would be good, that you can't see straight about this particular... Because everything
no,
you
I
see...
I think it's everyone else who didn't have enough contempt to see straight. I think it's everyone else who said,
this is private. Your contempt is so bottomless and so deep on every issue that it's like, except for, which I was going to raise and you carefully did yourself, Ireland.
Yes. Yeah, I'll give him that, sure. But no, it's contempt, but there's a remark of Lenin's I used to be very fond of. He said that what you have to do is have your heart on fire and your brain on ice.
I'm not an astute about the guy.
I just look at him very coldly, and I think this is disgusting. Now, why? Of course, it's true.
Could he just be?
Either I am wrong, or a lot of other people are.
Could he just be a guy who is a politician who has been consumed? Let me finish. He's a politician consumed by ambition. Uh-huh. And actually genuinely wants to do something and wants to, in effect, make a difference. And you may have political differences because he's not in favor of a litany of programs that you're in favor of, and because he tilts to the conservative side or to the center. I mean, some say that his most extraordinary achievement...
To the right, I would say.
No, you won't. But the most extraordinary achievement is he brought the Democratic Party to the center. That's what he's contributed to. In 8 years in the office.
The Democratic Party was in the center the year I was born, which is 50 years ago now. I'm not very impressed about that.
That center in the polemics that you
actually know. Center-right under Truman, okay. I would say. So, no, I don't think that was a great historic task. No, I just think his rule has been a long period of nothingness punctuated by nastiness, I would say. And that's going to be his epitaph.
The interesting thing is that most people aren't talking about all of your animus towards the president. They're talking about what you did in the... Affair Blumenthal.
Oh, yes.
Speak to me about that, because it's got all of your friends at The Nation.
Yeah, other places. Well, no, actually, a lot of my friends at The Nation take my side on this, but The magazine tried to publish an editorial which didn't speak for the whole. I mean, that's been put right.
There's a lot of confusion about this.
Yes.
Would you please straighten it out for me?
One of the things that Mr. Clinton does when his comfort women don't suit his purposes any longer is he arranges to have them defamed. You know, Jennifer Flowers was called a liar and a gold digger and all of this. And I won't take you through the whole story. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. In the Lewinsky case, before they knew she had any forensic evidence, they put out the story that she was trying to blackmail the president, that she was saying to him, if you don't sleep with me, I'll say that you have. Okay, which anyone who's ever been in an office job knows you have to protect yourself against if someone goes crazy in that way. But Mr. Clinton, well, we now know what he did about that too. Now, it bears on the question of obstruction of justice, because we know that they tried to find her various public and private jobs, public sector and private sector jobs, to secure a perjured affidavit.
That's well, but there's a link that you can't, I mean, you know.
Wait a second. Did they not?
Try to find her public jobs?
Certainly.
I mean, private jobs, sure.
Private,
sure.
And public
at the UN with
the
Bill
US
Richardson.
US office at the UN, the Pentagon, the White House, couldn't do enough for her.
Right.
It happens she gave a perjured affidavit. Could be there's no connection.
Okay, but you just said it was as if it was fact that they offered her the job.
It's factual right. It's factual right. There's no question about it. It would take a long time to establish, but I think it would take you forever to say there's no connection at all.
I'm not saying what, I'm just saying that she, among others, have not acknowledged that was in fact
well,
true.
I don't think I'd required her. I would have required her confirmation on this. I mean, I don't know. I just don't feel like it.
Okay.
On the other hand, the obstruction element kicks in with, that's the promise, then there's the threat. Those are the two things that constitute obstruction or witness tampering. The threat is, if you don't stay perjured, because they've lost contact with her by now, they can only reach her through the media. If you don't stay perjured, here's what we're going to say about you. You will be held up to the whole world by the most powerful man in the world as a blackmailing minx.
And
there's been nothing you can do about it because they didn't know about the DNA. Right. The commonplace word for that that's now been accepted is the stalker theory.
Right.
The president told Sidney that story. We know because Sidney went to the grand jury and told them all about it. He said that's what the president thought. Sidney, in my opinion, believed that story when he was told it. He certainly seemed to believe it when he told it to me and my wife.
At lunch.
So it was...
The moral of the story so far is make sure when you go into these kind of meetings, you take your wife with you.
Yes, I'm very glad the missus was there, but I think I would have... Don't think, well, yes, she's also a journalist.
A confirming witness is good.
She's also a journalist.
Right.
So it was embarrassing for Sidney, I imagine, and very upsetting for me when I discovered that, well, the line of the day in the White House, from Charles Ruff, the chief counsel, all the way on that, was that we don't know how this story got in the press, and certainly... We have no idea how the president's version, as told to Sidney, gets into 500 newspapers. Well, I thought, that this is ridiculous. And I had said so very often, and I knew many, many other people in Washington. Actually, I didn't know many journalists who had not heard from Sidney or others this story. It was commonplace and common knowledge. I thought, well, why should they get away with yet another lie at this stage? And I wrote about it in an English newspaper. I didn't say who the White House person was at the lunch, but anyone could have guessed. So when the House Judiciary Committee came to me and said, we know what story you've been telling and we know, would you say it again under oath? I said, sure. What are my alternatives? No, I won't.
Take me through that again. When who came to you?
The House Judiciary Committee came to me.
In the person of whom?
In the person of a woman named, their chief investigative counsel is named Susan Bogart.
Okay, so Susan shows up and Ms. Bogart shows
calls
up.
Calls me up, says, look, is it true that you've related and in one case printed, I forget if she mentioned printing it or not, but related, have knowledge of this story. I said yes. I've by then told that to anyone who called me.
Right.
Who would make an exception for the House Judiciary Committee. Walked me through the story. She said, well, would you put your name to it under penalty of perjury? And I said, well, I wouldn't need to be put under penalty of perjury. I would just repeat that I think it's true. But there are legal forms to be gone through, and it meant I was asked to execute an affidavit, which I did. The alternative would have been to say, I don't know what you're talking about, which wouldn't have been true, or no, it's not true, which would have been a lie, and a lie that would have protected Mr. Clinton. So it seemed pretty obvious what I ought to do. The problem was this for me. I said to them, look, it's Clinton who's on trial, right, not Sidney. This is evidence to show that the president has caused his deputies and underlings with public money on our dime to spread defamation of truthful women witnesses. They said, yeah, that's right. I said, no one else on trial here? No. President, you remember, said he didn't even watch that trial, didn't watch his own trial, right. Sent deputies in to sit for him, right. Sent his friends and colleagues in to do that for him. So I said, okay, but I will not stand by this affidavit if you use it against anyone else. I'll repudiate it. They can't give me any guarantees, but I know they heard what I said. I would do it again.
You would?
I sure would, yeah.
Now, I don't know the answer to this, so I'm just asking. What options did you think you had? Suppose you had said to this person from the House Judiciary Committee,
mm-hmm.
I'm a journalist, I'm not going to answer that question. What would she have said?
She'd have said, fine. That's what one person I know did say when they asked.
I'm a journalist, I'm not going to answer the question. Now, what's wrong with that answer?
It's just copping out. It's saying that I have to live here, I'm going to go along and get along. It's more trouble than it's worth to me. Perfectly, it's defensible, but I didn't want anyone thinking that of me. And I also thought that it deserved to be known, since it had been denied in the well of the Senate by the President's chief counsel, that these people were knowingly lying to the Senate and to the public. And I had possession of that information, which I had not been asked to keep to myself. Now, I really and truly wish it had been someone other than Sidney who'd made me aware of it. I mean, but I...
Because he was a good friend.
Yeah, but I made it as plain to them as I could that I was not going to be party to putting him in any jeopardy. And, of course, he wasn't in and is not now in any jeopardy. So all that subplot that was woven around me, fratricide, Judas Kiss and so on, was all...
So then you had to come up to... So what's happened to you as a result of all this?
Got called a lot of rude names.
Right.
Discovered that the name Hitch can be made to rhyme with the word snitch.
Yeah.
Defended myself on that score.
Maureen Dowd did that.
The fragrant Maureen did that. A snitch is someone who tries to get a plea bargain to save their own skin. I wasn't in any
situation.
She sort
of said it went from Trip to Hitch. I mean, that was from Trip to Hitch.
Linda and I don't know each other.
I know, but you know the point.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden you see columnists that were you.
Of course. I've had
writing
a lot of that.
About you as.
A lot of that. As if I'd done it
as a contemptible
to save my own
figure
skin or
who violated all standards of journalism. And if you had something you want to say, do what you did in the beginning, write about it, and don't be cruel. Here's what they said. I asked someone today.
Yes.
I said, why is this so controversial for you? Why is it you so have so much animus towards Christopher Hitchens? The answer was, he collaborated with the government. He betrayed a friend, and he filed an affidavit.
Right.
None of those things are what we think.
Well, I didn't collaborate with the government. I was testifying against the government. I wasn't cooperating with the authorities. Where I live, I don't know about where you live, the President of the United States and his gang are the authorities.
Hmm.
Certainly it's true in Washington,
but
I tell you
House
that.
But the House, and some would say, well, the government wasn't represented by it at another time.
The Judiciary Committee is the lawfully constituted committee of the House. I mean, that's not...
You know, during the McCarthy era, people would say that these were, in fact, the government that was doing the investigating, even though they came from the Congress. And they called people up to testify, and when they did, they were called collaborators.
Of those inquiries were indeed sponsored by the state after the Royalty Oath program was passed, and so
on.
No question about it. This just isn't like that. Furthermore, the people who testified in those cases were doing so that they wouldn't be asked to, they wouldn't be asked the questions themselves. They were bargaining to save their own skins. My skin was in no danger.
I'm way over.
Except from the people who were going to call me a scum later on. I mean, but. I wasn't plea bargaining. I wasn't buying myself any time or cutting myself any slack. Nor was I anonymously doing a denunciation of anybody. So the first objection of your friend, I think, is false. Betraying a friend, I don't think so. I mean, it was Mr. Clinton who sent someone who I can tell you, really loves him. I mean, really likes
Sidney Blumenthal.
Yeah. And had given up a lot to go work for him. Fed him a false and dirty story. Convinced him of its truth and let him go into the grand jury and tell it.
Well, did he go into the grand jury and say the president lied to him about other matters?
No, at the end, finally, in the front of the Senate, he was asked, does he now think he's been lied to by the president?
And
he said, I do. Well,
Sidney joined the club.
Yeah, he did, but Clinton did all that to him and then let him go and be asked these tough questions in the Senate. And I'm the one who betrays Sidney? It's Clinton who's betrayed Sidney. Just that having anything to do with Clinton means that everything around him is poisoned, including friendship between Sidney and me, though I hope still.
Well,
that might be repaired.
You hope?
No, I see no reason why not. He knows I didn't mean him any harm. He isn't in any trouble as a result of what I said. People are nauseated now, I find, more and more by the fact that Clinton walked in that trial. He got away scot-free. Nothing happened to him. And it's become more and more clear that since the acquittal, that all the stuff about the right-wing conspiracy and so on was all nonsense. So all that would need to happen was for Sidney to take the next step, as a lot of other former Clinton people have, and realize that he's working for someone who doesn't give a damn about him or anyone else. Then we could be friends again.
Have you called his house?
I did call his house.
And what happened?
Probably too soon.
What
too
happened?
Early. I got his extremely nice wife, who's also a friend of mine. And I think she must have thought it was too soon as well, because she replaced the receiver. Yes.
And you call for what reason?
I had a couple of things I wanted to explain to them, and a couple of things I wanted to say.
Which were?
Which were, well, that I didn't think he was in any jeopardy, or would be, and that I wanted them to understand what the position I'd been in was. You asked me one more question, which was, I could have just written it in an article.
Right.
You're right, of course. I was in the process of doing that when they called me. In fact, I think somehow they got wind of the piece. If that piece had come out a week earlier, it could have been used to accuse Sidney of perjury if he'd committed it, which, by the way, I don't think he did. In any case, would have amounted to the same thing. But by saying, no, I'll put my name to it, I was testifying in one jurisdiction against one defendant only, namely the President of the United States. And I think I probably missed both of them, but the intention was to hit the President and miss Sidney. I missed Sidney, anyway.
And you hope you can repair
it? No, the worst of it, actually, if you really want the truth, I mean, is that the whole thing may have been a waste of time, because the trial was a fix, in a way.
How was
there was no chance of them of it changing many people's minds. I did get a call from one senator, Democrat, good Democrat, who said he was now going to vote to convict on obstruction of justice. And he told me on the phone that Sunday that he was determined to do it now, but in the end he didn't. So I wasted my time, I guess. But it was, I thought it would have been cowardly not to stand by the story.
Okay, let me sum up here. This president will serve out his term.
Well, I guess, yeah. Reconciled.
He'll continue to prosecute the war.
He'll continue to refuse to answer questions about whether he's a rapist. He still hasn't said a word about that. Doesn't that give you a shock? He won't answer the question. People think it's his word against hers. He hasn't said anything yet.
He said his lawyer has responded for him.
A lawyer who he didn't know that year, and as far as I know, has never been in.
Well, but this is the lawyer that speaks to him now.
You'd want to do better than that if you'd be accused of rape, I think.
If you're going to have a lawyer speak
to him. I know a lawyer who will say it's not true.
Can't go there. I mean, if you're going to have a lawyer speak
to him.
No, he didn't have a lawyer at that time, did he? Did he have a lawyer?
He was the Attorney General of Arkansas
exactly.
at the time.
She didn't bring the charges at that time, so he had no need to have a lawyer at that time. So the lawyer you would bring forth at this time is the lawyer who's representing you. I mean, that's who happened to have just gone through and you've had exhausted.
He has no knowledge of the case, that's what I'm talking about. You'd want to do better with
But who had a knowledge of the case?
Well,
what lawyer had knowledge of the case?
Someone, or of the circumstances of the time. There have been inquiries before. To say, if I said to you, a plausible, respectable woman with no motive of malice right. has laid a charge of sexual assault against you, what do you say? Would you be content to say, well, I know a lawyer who will say that it's not true? I think you'd want to do...
Right.
Male self-respect would make you want to do a little better than that.
Of course it would.
By the way, it doesn't matter because no one is asking Clinton these questions. So he doesn't have to keep refusing to answer.
And the same argument...
I can't believe the laziness of the press.
Yeah, same argument could have been made about Lewinsky from the beginning. I mean, you would say, why doesn't someone come out and defend and make the position clear early on? Mm-hmm. And that argument was made at that time and was also made, and you make it... Now.
Well, he did deny that, of course, but he was lying through his teeth. But then,
but it wasn't denied in terms of full questioning for, and wasn't protesting to the fullest extent that might have been done. Although it was a protest, but it was short. And mm-hmm. my point again, No One Left to Lie To is this book by Christopher Hitchens, who states that clearly his feelings about the President of the United States and also business with Sidney Blumenthal, an aide to the president in the White House and a friend of Christopher's who he hopes will be able to regain the friendship at a future time. Most journalists seem to want to lecture to you.
Well, I think a lot of people didn't like me anyway. But it was a field day.
That's a whole other show. Thank you, Christopher.
It was a pleasure.
Pleasure. Christopher Hitchens, when we come back, Tony Bowie, the filmmaker, has just made a very interesting new film called Three Seasons.